Today on episode number 357, we have a phenomenal podcast success story, and we're going to hear part one of my interview with Daniel J. Lewis from the award-winning Audacity to Podcast, and you're going to hear my first take on Castmate.fm.
The School of Podcasting with Dave Jackson.
Podcasting since 2005, I am your personal podcast coach, Dave Jackson, and I am thanking you. And you know what? I'm pretty sure at the end of this episode, you're going to thank me for this episode. I'm so excited about this episode. If you're new to the show, this is where we come to talk about all things podcasting, from recording to planning to producing, all points in between. I bring my 20 plus years of technical training as a teacher so that, I don't know, stuff makes sense. Right? So then we're not just going to spew a bunch of jargon and let's talk RSS and kilobits per second. That's no fun. That doesn't make any sense. And if you would like to join in on this conversation, I cannot tell you how much I would love to have you in on this. We are having a lot of fun here. You can email me, dave@schoolofpodcasting.com. You can call in your comments, courtesy of podcastvoicemail.com. It's 888-563-3228. If you got a microphone plugged in, if you're on an iPhone, an iPad, anything of that nature, you can go over to schoolofpodcasting.com, use the little voicemail button there, and you can also leave a comment on the blog. And if you're new to the show, I've been doing this thing. I started it, I think, at the beginning of this year, just asking for podcast success stories, or basically answering the question, because of my podcast, blank. And it's a great way to promote your show. Hint, hint. And today we're going to hear from Heather. She does the Craft Lit podcast, as well as another podcast. You're going to hear kind of like the Jeffersons. It was a spinoff. So you're going to hear how she listened to her audience. You're going to listen how because she had an audience, getting a publisher for her book deal. Yes. Well, first of all, you're going to hear how she got a book deal. Then she's going to hear how, because she had the power of her audience, it's a great story. And I guess what I love about it is, look, little old me has been telling you for, 8 years now, how you can benefit from a podcast. And I love the fact that, A, people like Heather are willing to share their story, because I'm pretty sure you're tired of me saying this stuff. So it's nice to get real life examples. As a technical trainer, I teach, Excel to insurance people, basically, on a regular basis. And I can go in and say, look, it's pivot tables. Whee! But it's even better when somebody in class says, oh, here's how I use those. And I love real life examples in the classroom. And I love real life examples here in the podcast. So here is Heather from the Craft Lit Show. And of course, everything we talk about today, you can find out at schoolofpodcasting.com/357. And I'll have links out to all of her shows and such. Here we go. Here is Heather.
Hi, Dave. This is Heather from the Craft Lit and Just the Books podcasts. I heard you ask for because of my podcast story, so here's mine. My podcast tenure began as a crafty podcast for people like knitters, quilters, spinners, sewers, seamstresses, potters, people who work with their hands, but who love great literature. And since I was a literature teacher in my former life, I thought, oh, this is a perfect way to combine all of these fabulous things that I love doing.
I'm going to stop right there. Number one, so listen to that. It's not just people. Oh, are you kidding me? That's my chat. Somebody's on the chat window. There we go. Let me close out of that. And of course, because I'm playing her sound effect through the mixing board, I'm not going to edit that out. This is basically live today. And but number one, it wasn't just spinners. Seriously, there are people still spinning. Knitters. Okay. So we take that niche. Now let's double niche it down. It's people that work with their hands and love books. Awesome. Then take her background and you're combining it all. I mean, to me, that's why I love podcasting. For me, it's teaching, it's technology, and it's creative. sold in my book. All right, so I will now shut up and go back to Heather.
And it turned into this kind of zeitgeist. We have covered all sorts of classic literature, and we always seem to do it right when something big is happening in the world. We were reading Flatland when The Big Bang Theory had Flatland jokes, and everybody was all excited because, hey, they understood the jokes. Which is why a lot of the time what I talk about myself doing on the podcast is, quote-unquote, teaching to the joke. We don't have tests. We don't check up on anyone to find out if you've been listening. But we do like to get inside jokes out in the rest of the world, and so many of them are based on classic fiction. Well, after a while of doing this, husbands and partners started chiming in and saying, hey, the knitting content that comes before the book content is fun and all, but I'm not a knitter, and I don't care. So can you do one that's just the books? And there began the life of Just the Books podcast. All
check that out. So how did that podcast become about? It came about because of listening to her audience. She listened to her audience and went, hey, wait, can I take that information and just do the book part? And so she did. And you're serving your community then. And so think about it. Well, let me play the rest of this. But I just love the fact that, think about this. If this was a radio station, if this was a corporate thing, do you know how many meetings you'd have to decide whether or not you could do that? And the fact that you can just go, oh, sure, why not? So let's continue.
Can you do one that's just the books? And there began the life of Just the Books podcast, all the lit and none of the craft. And that is a sister feed. The show numbers are identical. So if you were listening to Craft Lit episode 304 last week, you could easily flip over to Just the Books 305 next week if you just don't have time to listen to the crafty stuff. And that way we have this whole kind of family of book lovers whose hands are busy. So if you fidget, if you work in a wood shop, if you work in a lab, I have lots of people who listen who have drone jobs where they do the same repetitive action over and over again. But this way, they get to listen to curated, fabulous classic literature.
And go home and talk about it with their spouses because she went through and said, I'm going to do this for I've got a request from my audience, and there it is. And so she's facilitating a community talking about it. Love it.
Because my part of the podcast is to explain, hey, you better watch out for this, or, ooh, look for this character to come back this week, but he's going to be totally different. You need to pay attention to what's different about him.
Which then positions her as an expert.
Or I just give people a heads up about, they're going to use this word and you don't know this word because nobody's used this word in 400 years. So here is what the word is, here's where it comes from, and here's what it means.
Which is information you can't get anyplace else unless you want to go dig out of a dictionary.
Or sometimes it's things like with Gulliver's Travels, Jonathan Swift was making fun of specific people. And so I was able to give a little bit of information on who he was dissing and why. And that kind of stuff is really fun, and it makes the books make so much more sense, and it makes the jokes in the books so much more enjoyable.
And that, again, you're helping people there, right? You're, in her case, she's helping her audience get more out of the book than if they just read it.
And all of that led to my book contract, because back in 2007, we were listening to A Tale of Two Cities, which is great. It's a fantastic book. I hated it in high school. A listener convinced me to read it, and so we did it on the podcast, and it was awesome.
Here again, what did she do? She listened to her audience. And in the same way that people trust you because you're the expert, you trust your audience, right? Because you're pals, you're buds. And so if somebody said, hey, Dave, you know, you ought to check out this book, I'll go read it. I trust you. Awesome. I love this story. Can you tell?
But there's a knitting character in Tale of Two Cities named Madame Defarge. And so feeling that it was completely unfair for Jesus to be the only one who gets the What Would Jesus Do bracelets, I thought it was important for people to have What Would Madame Defarge Knit bracelets. And so we started WWMDFK, and it was a joke. And one day in 2010, I woke up and said, that's not a joke. That's a book title. And so I found a book design that I was very happy with, where I found designers who loved literature, who were inspired by literature, who would design designs based on characters from classic fiction, and then write an essay about why that book and that design became this little inspirational thing for them and now is offered to our readers. And the first book did very well. It got picked up by Shannon Oakey at Cooperative Press. She's an independent publisher, and I needed an independent publisher because I wanted to do weird things with it. You know, as a podcaster, you kind of get used to your own groove. And so I really had some things I wanted to do. Number one, I wanted to pay my designers, not a flat upfront fee, but a profit-sharing model. So every time we get paid, everybody gets paid.
That is huge. That you don't understand. That is huge. Nobody does that. No publisher would do that because they're going to go, well, that means we got to pay more people more money. And she did it. That is so cool.
And that can pay off, especially over the course of the life of a book, that can pay off enormously.
Absolutely.
So that's one thing I wanted to do. The other thing was I wanted to make sure that the paper version of the book came with an enhanced e-version of the book, where there were links out. So if, for instance, a designer used a very strange cast-on technique, we can link directly from the ebook out into YouTube, where people can watch a video on how to do that bizarre cast-on. And we can link to recipes, and we can link to all sorts of little tidbits and good things from within the book.
So here again, even in her books, she's helping, she's got that teacher thing going on again, where she's helping people understand, she's making it easier for people, and it's adding understanding of the content.
Other publishers weren't so interested in doing all of that. I think it's extra work, and I think it's a little weird if you don't live on the web.
And it's extra money that you're paying to people.
But because I had the podcast base, because I had my readership, and because I had a platform and a proven track record at that time of having continually recorded and released an episode every week.
Which makes you reliable. You are reliable. Why? Because every week I can count on you to deliver great content. And that just stamps it right there on your forehead. Look at me. I'm reliable.
I had no trouble finding my publisher.
I love that phrase. I'm going to put that as a ringtone on my phone. I had no trouble finding my publisher. That's awesome.
And getting the book picked up. And then getting the book out there. Because again, I talk to my people. They talk to their people. The book gets sold. So it's all been a really exciting, extraordinary ride. And we continue to release new models. We're starting to do online book groups, which is a fee-based online service where we come together and we get to have a book talk face-to-face on a Google Hangout so everybody can see everybody else, which is...
Okay, so notice what she just said here, right? She's gone through this whole story. She's developed this relationship. She's been helping people. She's been enhancing their reading thing, blah, blah, blah. And finally, way down here at the end of the story, oh, and now I'm taking that relationship and there is a fee based. This is when the monetization comes into play. Now that I've got the relationship, now that people are used to, now that people trust me that I'm going to deliver great content, a fee based. Let me back that up just a pinch.
Online book groups, which is a fee-based online service where we come together and we get to have a book talk face-to-face on a Google Hangout so everybody can see everybody else, which is something we don't normally get to do. And I get to hear everybody else, which is definitely something that doesn't happen. People are always talking to me, but they never get me to hear them.
And now she's getting an even better opportunity to understand her audience, which is going to help her generate better content. See how this works? It just spirals out of control.
So that's one of the new things we're doing. And now we're working on enhanced ebooks for the books we're reading, where every week you can listen on the podcast, you can listen on the show notes, you can listen on our apps because we have iPhone apps for the show. You can get a subscriber stream for premium content, or now you will be able to download the chapters for the books that we cover that day. And those chapters will have links out like annotations to interesting pictures on the web or useful information that might help you understand this vocabulary.
I think I might have to have Heather on the show Because what I just heard right there is I'm putting out great content and I'm putting a lot of work into it. And this is someone who obviously is passionate about literature. Did you hear all the stuff that she's doing? But do you also hear how her community is gobbling it up? And she's meeting with her community. Awesome.
Or audio for Craftlit.
Or
audio for Just the Books, so you can listen and read. And the really exciting thing about this new product is that means that ESL students and
I'm going to back that up.
Get to do.
Here we go.
And I get to hear everybody else, which is definitely something that doesn't happen. People are always talking to me, but they never get me to hear them.
I backed this up because I basically cut her point in two and it didn't make sense. So here we go. Sorry about that, Heather.
So that's one of the new things we're doing. And now we're working on enhanced ebooks for the books we're reading, where every week you can listen on the podcast, you can listen on the show notes, you can listen on our apps because we have iPhone apps for the show. You can get a subscriber stream for premium content, or now you will be able to download the chapters for the books that we covered that day. And those chapters will have links out like annotations to interesting pictures on the web or useful information that might help you understand this vocabulary, or audio for Craftlit, or audio for Just the Books, so you can listen and read. And the really exciting thing about this new product is that means that ESL students and homeschooling families can really use these books. The books will include writing prompts, discussion prompts, and all of those links.
And again, can you hear? I do, at least. I can spot a teacher a mile away, right? And here's someone who, number one, now they're having side effects they didn't think about. Oh, by the way, ESL people can do this. English as a second language can jump all over this. Very, very cool. All right.
Lots of exciting things are happening, but they're all happening, and they are only happening because in 2006, I started this podcast. So thank you so much for the opportunity to share my story. I am very excited about it, and I'm very proud about it.
You should be, by the way. That's awesome.
And I'm also really excited to see more and more people come up with these great ideas where they know there's a niche, they know there are people who are interested in something like this, but they haven't quite gotten there yet. And then all of a sudden, one morning, they wake up and go, that's it. That's what I need to be recording about. And then they go do it. It is so gratifying to see that happening. Grassroots up, baby. It's the way to go. Thank you so much, Dave. Have a great day. And I look forward to seeing the next thing you talk about on your podcast.
Awesome. Heather, somehow, some way, I'm going to shake your hand someday. Does that rhyme? That sounds like a song. But very, very cool stuff. The only thing she forgot, and that's because she's probably polite, plug your stuff. So I'm going to do that for you now. Craftlit.com is where you can find her, obviously, craft and literature there. If you go to crafting-a-life.com/books, you'll get to Just the Books. Mama O'Knits at mamaonits.com. That's her knitting blog. What would Madame Defarge knit? Books 1 and 2 are available at wwmdfk.com. Loved it. And that's the other thing. She said that was a joke. It was a joke that her community got. Her community. Oh, just love. Heather, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. That was very, very cool. I'm equally excited to bring you part one of an interview with the award-winning Daniel J. Lewis of the Audacity to Podcast. Find all his stuff over at noodle.mx.com. I refer to his podcast a lot. I work with Daniel, who is from the Audacity to Podcast. You can find that at theaudacitytopodcast.com. I also work with Ray Ortega of podcastersstudio.com and podcastersroundtable.com. We are the three amigos. And I talk occasionally about Cliff Ravenscraft. There's a bunch of different podcast consultants. And today I'm tipping my hat to Nick Suberling because, well, I talk about that in the podcast, but I just want to say right now, Nick, thank you so much for helping me, for making me raise my game. I think this is a better interview because of Nick. And with that, I'm going to shut up. All right. I've been looking forward to this for a long time. Joining me via Skype, the one, the only, the award-winning, and we're going to talk about that a little later, from the Audacity to Podcast, Daniel J. Lewis. Daniel, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hey, Dave, it's great to talk with you. We're going to have a lot of fun, I know, because we're going to geek out on a lot of things.
We are. It's going to be fun. And I want to tip my hat before I even start out. Nick Suberling of Start Talking and Recording Today, when he interviewed Ray Ortega, he did such a great job. And we might actually kind of blend this concept in. One of the things I like about people that do podcasts about podcasting is they make me raise my game to a new level. We're going to talk maybe a little bit about, and get the air quotes ready, competition. But one of the things that Nick did when he interviewed Ray was he asked Ray a little bit about his childhood. So we're not going to go back quite that far to where, but well, first things first, it is Daniel J. Lewis. What does the J stand for?
The J stands for Joseph, which is actually the parent company to everything I do is D. Joseph Design. That was because somewhere along the way, when I first started that company, when I was, I think, 19 or so, I heard something about it's so much easier to trademark or protect a company name if it has your name in it. So I didn't like just Daniel Lewis Design or Lewis Design or anything like that. And I saw all these J.B. Alexander and Jose A. Banks and all of this stuff. And I thought, oh, D. Joseph Design sounds cool. So I decided to grab it for that. And now I latch on to this Daniel J. Lewis branding for two reasons. One is Daniel Lewis by itself is so common, Lewis being one of the top three most popular English last names. Daniel Lewis is so common, I really wanted to distinguish myself from all of the other Daniel Lewis's out there. And also, it looks a lot better in a computer world where usernames have no spaces. Instead of being Danielle Wiss, I can be Daniel J. Lewis, and the J nicely splits it out there.
I never thought of that. That's a good point. Now, I know you're basically in Cincinnati, Ohio. Is that where you basically tell people you're from?
Right, because they know where Cincinnati is. I'm actually in northern Kentucky or southern Cincinnati.
Got it. Now, have you always lived in Ohio?
Most of my life has been spent around the Ohio area or Cincinnati area. I was born in a secret location and then transported by Secret Service to Ohio and then spent several years there. Grew up mostly in California.
Okay.
And came back to Ohio and then spent years trying to remove all of the mannerisms I'd picked up in California. And I've been in this Cincinnati area, though, for most of my life.
Well, there you go. That's something I didn't even put on the list of your questions. How old are you?
Right now, I am 30.
Oh, there you go. The big 3-0.
Yeah, I just hit it recently, and I feel old and losing it. Every time I do a live podcast, we have our webcam from the side when we do a multi-host podcast, and I can see the back of my head, and I see the balding spot just getting bigger and bigger with every episode we do.
That's me. Every time now and then, I do a thing now where I'm constantly rubbing my forehead to see where my hairline starts. I'm like, it seems to be creeping on me, and that's really making me very nervous. But speaking of growing up, what were your hobbies when you were a kid?
I loved computers and Legos. Those were the two ways that I primarily played as a kid because I liked being creative with Legos. I would create all of these things, have adventures with spaceships that I'd make out of Legos and make all of these contraptions. And I was a Lego kid. I was the youngest of four biological children, and I inherited then everyone else's Lego blocks. So I would play with all of those and make lots of things. But then also I started to learn computers and would get into old video games like Commander Keen and Descent and a bunch of those classics and started learning computers, got a desktop publishing program from Microsoft called Publisher 97, I think was the version I first got, or 93.
Nice.
And started learning page layout back then started getting better and better. And that was my hobby. It was computers. I built computers for some people. I did some computer consulting for some people as a kid.
Awesome. Well, speaking of that, then, do you remember what your first like official job was?
Yeah, it was the job I left. I was there for 10 years, although my position changed many times in the organization, but I was working for a nonprofit Christian organization, and I was hired on as a graphic artist and moved around in the organization, eventually became a presentation designer, where I spent many years with that organization and totally revolutionized their presentations. Then I moved on to web design just before I accomplished all of my goals, and then decided it was time to move on from there.
Now, do you have any kind of degree in graphics or anything like that? Or is just stuff you picked up from just being a little baby nerd all those years?
It was stuff, yeah, I picked up from others. Once I got the eye and understood the principles, I was able to start teaching myself by just looking at good design out there and recognizing what was good design, what was bad design, and start looking for how did they do this and how are they making this effect, and learning it that way, very much hands-on. But my actual education is in music composition, believe it or not. I composed many songs as a teenager and young adult, and in fact got to compose my sister's wedding processional, and to my greatest pleasure, got to compose my own wife's wedding processional, to see her walking down the aisle to the music that I'd written for her. Just gave me goosebumps every time I think about it.
See, there you go. Kudos to Nick Suberling. I had no idea you had any kind of music capability. What's your main instrument?
Piano.
There you go.
I've also worked with trumpet, and everybody learns how to play the recorder, it seems. And, but piano was my main instrument, but I've composed orchestral music, trumpet music, strings, all kinds of instruments.
Very cool. Well, let's get into your podcasting history. You mentioned how you were at that job, and you sounds like you went through a series of different positions where you actually got into web design. How did you kind of get into podcasting? Maybe what was the first podcast that you listened to? Do you remember back that far?
Yeah, it was around 2005 when iTunes 4.9, I believe it was, came out and started offering podcasts inside of iTunes. So I searched for technology podcasts, and I found two podcasts that I subscribed to, This Week in Tech, and then the one other podcast was from my now friend, John Wilkerson. It was called The Jesus Geek, and I listened to those two podcasts, actually putting them on my laptop computer and taking my laptop computer in the car with me to play my podcast episodes, because I didn't have an iPod. There weren't smartphones really back then. That's how I listened to podcasts.
That was convenient. That's wild. Well, okay. So you went from listening. What inspired you to start podcasting?
It was This Week in Tech was recorded back then through Skype calls. Well, they still use Skype even today. But I realized at some point that, wow, they're using Skype to do this, and they're recording it, and they're doing some audio editing. They're posting it on a website. These were all things I knew how to do. I thought, this is something I could do. And it was in one of Leo Laporte's other podcasts that at that time, I believe, was called Net at Night with Amber MacArthur. They mentioned this little podcast called You Suck at Web Design. Nice. And it was this guy who would do this monologue of a story that he obviously embellished, fictional story, but it was related to web designing and working with clients. And it was a funny podcast. It was scripted, but it was funny. And the way he told his stories, and he had an awesome voice too. And I thought, this is a way I could do this. I have some funny stories that when I tell people these stories of my life as a bachelor and owning my own house and all of this stuff at a young age, I have these funny stories that people love to hear, and I'd like to tell these in a podcast. So I started out by scripting my podcasts in 2007. That was with my podcast called The Ramen Noodle, which I still do today. It's you can get to it now at the website address, cleancomedypodcast.com, but theramennoodle.com still takes you there. And we still call it The Ramen Noodle, Clean Comedy Podcast to this day.
Very cool. Now, what other shows are you doing besides the obviously you're doing the Ramen Noodle and the Audacity to Podcast. What are the other shows that you're doing?
Yeah, the only other show that I host right now is our Once Upon a Time podcast over at oncepodcast.com. And we're having a lot of success with that and really enjoying doing that. We'll be podcasting over the summer hiatus. And it's been awesome to connect with some of the actors from Once Upon a Time, the TV show, and talk to them in our podcast. And it's just so much fun to reach a community that I didn't realize existed before.
Very cool. Well, let's change topics a little bit. I want to talk about, of course, it is the award-winning Audacity to Podcast, and we all kind of chuckle about that. But that's really not, I mean, that's something that I'm very proud that you won that. Do you remember who you were up against by any chance?
I can look right now. It's not Twit or some of the other major tech podcast networks. They were not in the awards for different reasons. But yeah, I can look at the list right now. F5 Live, Build and Analyze, Google at a Glance, Podcatcher, Ruby Rogues, Stolen Droids Podcast, Tech Stuff, This Is Only a Test, and Your Website Engineer. And some of these podcasts actually surprised me that when I looked at their iTunes page, they had 500 reviews in iTunes.
Wow.
And here I am with somewhere around 100 reviews internationally. And I was blown away that I won the award in that category.
Well, when you, I had put out, most podcasters say, hey, you know, whatever it is, voting is open. If you're interested, feel free to nominate me, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Did you sit back and was it something that you said, hey, I'm really going to make a concerted effort to do this? Did you come up with a strategy or was it just kind of a make it up as you go kind of thing?
Yeah, it was definitely a strategy because in the past I'd done a kind of blitz and encouraged people to vote and to nominate. And the way the process works is that first a podcast has to be nominated by enough people, and a person out there, a listener, can only nominate podcasts once. And that's every podcast that they want to nominate. They have to submit all of their nominations at one time and they can only do it once. And then the process goes through a vetting process, filtration. Each podcast has to meet certain requirements. And Todd Cochran from Blueberry has talked about some of these requirements before. And then after that, it opens up for the daily voting. So I had come up with a strategy of, the main thing was I realized I need to show people what to do. I can't just tell them. I need to show them what to do. And around the same time, I got my first digital SLR camera with also video capabilities. It's the Canon T4i. And now there's a T5i out, but which is essentially the same thing, really. But I wanted to create a video then, high-quality video, where people would get to see me speaking. And then I would also show them with some screen recording software how to do the voting process, what to put where, how to do it. So I created that video, put it on all of our podcasts, and encouraged them to nominate our different podcasts in different categories. And at the same time, I discovered that several others were also recommending to nominate my podcast and then later on voting for my podcast. So at each point, the nominations and then the voting, I would create a video showing people how to do this and then remind them frequently to do this. In every podcast episode, I'd mention it at least once, not extremely a long thing explaining how to do it, but I give them the basics. I'd say, please nominate this show with this domain, this show with this domain, this show in this domain, and then the categories for each. And I tell them, go to this particular address to watch a video and get more information about how to do that. I'd say that in every single podcast episode at that point for the voting and nominations. And because of that, being across all of our podcasts in the network, I think that's what helped get us nominated in all of these categories. We had 3 podcasts in the categories. Our Once Upon a Time podcast, which is the one I thought would win. Mm-hmm. And at first, that's the one I wanted to win. That was under the entertainment category. And our Clean Comedy podcast made it under the comedy category. And there I was amazed it even made it into the nominations. I think I'm the only clean comedy podcast to have made it into the nominations finalists for several years of the podcast awards. Almost everything else in there has been explicit for the last few years, if I remember correctly. and then the audacity to podcast for technology. So reminding them quite regularly and showing them how to do it and spreading this across all of our podcasts, I think is what helped, because our community then, people who listen to Once Upon a Time would think, yeah, I want Once Upon a, our Once podcast to win. But then they know that I also host this other podcast, and because they like us, they would also vote for our other podcast.
And that's one of the things when I think back to this that probably helped is not only were you showing people how to vote, and you weren't just telling them vote for this podcast, you were telling them specifically what category, because if you think about it, they could have put, you know, the audacity to podcast in technology. They could have put it under People's Choice. They could have put it under, you know, whatever they wanted to. So you were actually focusing their actions so that they didn't accidentally vote in some other category that may not have been as accurate. And thus, it's easier to get that nomination, I would think, as opposed to, hey, he got, you know, 14 votes in 37 different categories, none of which were enough to get your, you know, to get you to the next round, I guess.
And that will actually disqualify a podcast. If they are nominated in mass for multiple categories, with the exception of, I think it's the People's Choice and Best Produced and Best Video Podcast, you're allowed to be in those and something else. But any of the other categories, like if you're in business, comedy, and culture arts, regularly nominated for that, then that podcast will actually be disqualified.
So out of all of those, do you think, was there one thing that really was like the key to the success, or was it just a conglomeration of all those steps?
It was, I think the main two things were showing people what to do and regularly reminding them about that. And well, I guess that's kind of two right there. But and then the other thing is getting the whole community involved, because the podcast awards are not a measure of the most popular podcast. I can tell you these other podcasts that I was up against are more popular than mine. But the podcast awards are about the podcast with the most engaged community. Mm-hmm. And that's what I felt we had behind us, is a very, very engaged community that was faithful to go and nominate us and then to vote for us every single day.
Yeah, to me, it's a big measure of influence. You know, who's the most influential podcast in this genre? To me, that when I see the awards, that's what I think, at least.
Oh, and one other thing that I think played a huge part was the community outside of my own community. Like a couple of the other Once Upon a Time podcasts actually were telling people, go vote for Once Podcast. They made it into the awards. So a vote for them is really supporting all of the Once Upon a Time podcasts. And like our friend Cliff Ravenscraft sent out an email saying, here are my recommendations to vote, and here are the people I know of that are in these categories. Choose which one you want to vote for. And a lot of people were doing that kind of thing, suggesting to vote for their particular friends. So I know that the Audacity to Podcast was on several recommendation lists from other podcasters who were in different categories.
Obviously, to have influence, you have to connect with your audience. Obviously, there's Twitter, there's Facebook, there's email, there's comments. Is there anything that you go, this is the way I prefer? Or are there steps that you take? Is Monday email day and Tuesday Twitter day and Thursday LinkedIn day? Or you know, because I know for me personally, I am horrible at Facebook. And I'm about ready to pull down the School of Podcasting page, because I use Facebook to keep up with my great nephews and nieces. And I'm thinking, you know, if you're not going to do it right, just don't do it. It looks really horrible at this point. So any tips on, I guess, connecting with your audience and, you know, steps or procedures or strategies that you follow?
Yeah, it's really be where it makes sense and be there if you can be there. That sounds redundant, but by that, like, I am on Google Plus personally, talking in the podcasters community on Google Plus. And that is just as a sidestep, helping build my brand, because I'm just there engaging in the conversation. I sometimes will link to past content I've produced and say, this will answer your question. But it really does depend on where can you engage with people. Like our Once Upon a Time podcast does have its own Twitter account, and it has 13,000 followers now to it. And my personal Twitter account has, I think, not even 4,000 or somewhere around there. So our Once Podcast Twitter account is far more popular, and we are engaged on that account and engaging with other fans of the TV show. I wouldn't create a individual Twitter account for any of our other podcasts because there isn't as much engagement or need for the engagement there. I just engage with that content through my personal account. On Facebook, Google Plus, same thing. The pages or groups that we create are ones where we know we can invest some attention into these, and our audience is there and will be communicating with us there. So as far as what day is what, I don't quite have that pattern yet. Usually I do attack my inbox early in the week, and I try to reply to as many emails as I can when I get feedback from listeners, whether it's helping them with the problem or simply saying thank you for your feedback or something like that, trying to engage as much as I can and in focused batches, but then not letting that distract me from the rest of my work that actually pays the bills and allows me to eat every week or most every week.
There you go. Well, speaking of that and distracting things, do you have, like, what's the least productive thing you do that you wish you could quit?
Working. That is really hard because I see it really depends on my mood. I know that sounds kind of bipolar, but sometimes it's preparing for certain podcasts, like our Once Upon a Time podcast. I put a lot of time into preparing for that, reading feedback, rewatching the episode many times, getting sound clips, screenshots, doing research, all of that. That's why I feel like we have one of the best podcasts out there, and that seems among the fans to be the most downloaded one, because I'm putting so much stinking time into it. That's one of those things that podcast preparation is often where I feel like this is distracting me from doing the work that actually pays the bills. Stuff like web design or presentation design or any of the design services or development services I offer, consulting, that sometimes it feels like the podcasts are distracting me from that. But then I have to remind myself, wait, the podcasts are how people know that these things are services I offer. So if I stopped podcasting, my income would also stop as well. Because although I'm not making money directly from every podcast, or making a lot of money anyway, I'm not making a lot of money, just clarifying that.
Okay.
I am making money because of my podcasts. It's because people hear in my podcast that I offer a particular service or design something or have released a plugin or a digital product. It's because of that that then people come and buy that from me, even though the podcast itself doesn't generate a lot of income.
And you don't really plug that a ton. I mean, you mentioned it a little bit at the end. Oh, by the way, if you need any help with this or that or this and that, you know, here's my website. It's not like you're beating people over the head with that.
I feel like, well, number one, I don't want my podcast episodes to be infomercials. I work very hard at that. And I received one iTunes review once where someone did say they felt like a certain episode was a waste of their time and was one giant infomercial. And I panicked at that because I thought, oh no, I just failed at what I've been working so hard not to do. And I've tried to reach out to that person and ask them, what made this seem like an infomercial to you? I really want to make this right and not make this mistake again. But the promoting myself, yeah, I do often forget to say, hey, hire me to do this, or I can do this, or I sell this. I often forget that. In fact, in my Once Upon a Time podcast, we're 102 episodes into it. I think only once or twice have I remembered to mention cross-promote my own services in it. Because it's just, I'm more passionate about the content than the trying to promote my own business.
Speaking of that, let's give you a chance just to plug a little bit. I know, obviously, I recently just talked about your plugin that you just released. And what's the name of that again?
Social Subscribe and Follow Links, or for short, Subscribe and Follow.
Yeah, and you can find that at subscribeandfollow.com. So you've got a programming background. You've got a... no, not at all.
I have always referred to myself as a copy and paste programmer. All right. I'd find someone else who did something similar and hack their code around. But this is the first time I actually programmed it almost from scratch.
Ah.
So it's in PHP, in mostly it's written in PHP, the language that runs WordPress itself and a lot of website content systems out there. And I would regularly have the PHP reference manual open in one tab and my programming language open in another tab and have to just look for what in the world is the command that does this. Yeah, being my first plugin, this was not copy and paste coding. This was actually written from scratch. And as such, I'm still going through and finding spots where I could have done that better. I can still optimize this with an update, straighten this out, slim down the code, optimize it in certain ways. So the reason I created this plugin is for a while, I'd been doing this kind of design work for clients that when they'd hire me to create a website for them or design their website, whether they're a podcast or blog or whatever, they would always love my subscription buttons on my own podcast websites. You can look at any of my podcast websites on the network and you'll see similar subscription buttons. And people loved that. And I designed those very intentionally to be able to convert website visitors into podcast subscribers. So I wanted a strong call to action. And I created those buttons. And the first iteration of them was completely manually written. That was where it was a list in HTML and hard-coded CSS, the kind of stuff that if I took it to another website, I had to completely redo it. So then for the past year or so, I had in mind to turn this into a plugin. And within the last few weeks, as of the middle of May, near the beginning of May or late April, I decided I'm going to do this. I'm going to sit down and do this. So I really focused. I had some nice, convenient downtime. I emptied my email inbox, which only happens every now and then. And I was on top of things. I felt like this is the time I have to actually do this. So I sat down, started writing it, and I was really happy with the results because now instead of requiring me to hard code everything, it allows people to create their own version of this, put in their own links, change the colors themselves, and I have a lot more planned for it. So it basically creates these icons on someone's website that can link to Twitter, Facebook, iTunes, Stitcher. If you look out there, I'm the only person who has a scalable version of an iTunes podcast logo. No one else out there has it because I created it myself. Same thing with Stitcher. No one else is using a scalable version of the Stitcher logo. I created it myself and some other logos there. But I wanted to give people the ability to create a strong call to action on their site, whether it be subscribe to RSS or subscribe in iTunes. And that's what the plugin now allows people to do. So that I put in, I think, 2 solid weeks of programming this thing. And now people can get it and not have to hire me to design it for them, but they can just work with it themselves.
How has it been so far? I mean, it's only been out, not even a week. Yeah.
Yeah, about a week.
Has it been, because I would always think doing a plugin, you're going to have somebody with that wacky theme or something like that. It could become a support nightmare. How's it been so far?
So far, it's been pretty easy. I have had a couple issues that a couple people have shown me some screenshots and said, hey, this is messing up here. Or when I put it on this site with this particular theme, this happens. So then I can just go in, look at their site or know generally what's going on and then know how to fix that on my side. And I just push out an update. And when you buy the plugin at subscribeandfollow.com, it does come with a year of free updates. And then you can subscribe for more updates after that, or just at the end of a year, you still get to keep the plugin and use it. But if you want continued updates, then you subscribe to it.
All right. Hey, Daniel, I tell you what we're going to do. We're going to, we've been talking a while. And would it be okay if you come back next week?
Yes, I would love to do that. I enjoyed this conversation so far, and I'm really looking forward to continuing our conversation.
Excellent.
All right. And I'm actually going to give you a little behind the scenes. I learned this trick from Mike Russell of Music Radio Creative. Find him at schoolofpodcasting.com/musicradiocreative.com. They'll make all sorts of jingles and stuff for you. And if you have, I kind of knew after I talked to Daniel for a while, and at the end I said, hey, I'm going to say, hey, we've been talking a while. Can you come back next week? And you're going to say, sure, whatever, you know. And then you'll hear next week when I say, hey, Daniel, welcome back. And between you and me, he didn't go anywhere. It was the same interview, but it's a fun thing to do. And I learned that from Mike Russell, who, of course, has the radio background. He's from the UK, right? So, hey, let's pimp the bejesus out of Daniel. DJosephDesign.com is where you can have him make your album art, make your website, all that fun-filled stuff. TheAudacityToPodcast.com is where you can find the award-winning The Audacity to Podcast is where you can find his podcast about podcasting. All of his stuff you can find at noodle.mx. And next week, we're going to talk about some insights into building a network, having hosts that aren't yours on the show. And so we'll be talking about that next week with Daniel. Subscribe and follow is where you can find his cool WordPress plugin. And then if you go to learnaudacity.com, you can sign up and take his class on learning Audacity, which is that free software program that you can use to record your podcast. So thank you very much, Mr. Daniel J. Lewis, for taking the time out of your day to come on the show. And we will see you next week.
School of Podcasting. Dave Jackson.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're going to start off with some quick podcast success stories. Here again, podcasting is opening doors to people. You're connecting with your audience, so you're getting to know them a little better.
Subscribe now at schoolofpodcasting.com.
And holy wow, look at the time. It's we're almost at 52 minutes. Tell you what, I'm not going to talk about castmate.fm. If you go out to our website, schoolofpodcasting.com/357, I'll have a link to a blog post that I wrote about that. Also, if you want to sign up for the newsletter, go to schoolofpodcasting.com/newsletter. You'll be notified when there are new episodes out. You'll also get bonus content. And obviously, we never share your information, things like that. schoolofpodcasting.com/newsletter. And I will be talking more about castmate.fm. next week, as well as part two of our interview with Daniel J. Lewis from the Audacity 2 podcast. Speaking of podcasts, if you're looking to start a podcast, I've got a website for you, and it's got a technical trainer behind it who's going to make things super easy and super fun to get started. Go over to schoolofpodcasting.com, click on the Join Now button, and I got to say, we're having a little confusion with coupons. Because you made it to the end of this podcast, the coupon is LISTENER, L-I-S-T, E-N-E-R. Use that at the School of Podcasting to get a big chunk of that first month off your price. The other coupon code I have is SOP free. That is for use at Libsyn when you're ready to order your hosting. SOP free. So I keep getting people entering SOP free at the School of Podcasting and it doesn't work. And I also keep having people misspell the word listener. It's L-I-S-T-E-N-E-R. At the School of Podcasting, SOP free at Libsyn. Now, if you don't have a podcast yet and you don't have a website, send me an email with Quick Start and I will actually send you a link to have you order your hosting for your website and I'll earn a commission from that. From that, I'll actually go over, set up your website, install all the plugins and give you a free month at the School of Podcasting. So if you have any questions on any of those, just send me an email, dave@schoolofpodcasting.com. You can, call in your comments, 888-563-3228. You can use the little voicemail button out of the website. Our blog is out at our website, which, of course, is schoolofpodcasting.com. So thank you so much for tuning in. Let me remind you that it is time to start living a life worth podcasting about. You heard from Heather today. You heard from Daniel. Both these people are reaching a global audience. Your audience is waiting for you. And let me help you reach them. Go out to schoolofpodcasting.com. Click on the Join Now button. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you again next week with another episode of the School of Podcasting's Morning Announcements. Take care. God bless.